End of intermission. Part two.
Then we go to Ray's music exchange with the great Ray Charles. There's a real funny scene. This kid is about to steal a guitar, and Ray Charles pulls out a gun and shoots around the kid, and the kid runs out. He goes, "Now get!"
And then what they're trying to do, the reason they're here is now that the band's together, they're trying to pick up the instruments.
Yes.
And they're haggling with Ray Charles. This piano's no good. What are they doing with this? And Ray Charles like, I'll show you it's good. And Ray Charles sits down and plays some music.
Yes. Inside the record exchange, the band has picked out their instruments and they're playing, and Jake and Elwood are dancing to the music. And then outside, this is where we have the giant choreographed scene with all the people.
I hope that's right.
On the L, on the, you know, the rise for the L train and down. It's just a huge, those are all dancing extras. And there's hundreds of them.
This reminded me, it was reminiscent of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, it was a beautiful number. You know, Ray Charles is great at what he does.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt. And then they conclude the song up, and the Blues Brothers are like, all right, we'll take it.
And Ray goes, and naturally, I'll take an IOU. And then they start adjusting their ties and looking at their watches.
He knows them too well.
He
already
knows.
So then we get to, they drive for a long time, and they get to,
drive to a Howard Johnson's,
a restaurant.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, you guys go in and get something to eat, I'm gonna make a phone call. They go to phone an agent, and they both are in this phone booth, and oddly enough, Elwood Blues goes, who are you gonna call? They're going to call Marty Sline, who was a booking agent. He got us some good gigs in the past. He can help us out now. And while this happens, Carrie Fisher pulls up with a flamethrower, and the phone booth is right next to a giant propane tank.
As they are. For people listening, back in the past, every phone booth was powered by a propane tank.
Turns the flamethrower loose, and the propane tank blows up, and
boom.
The phone booth just shoots straight up into the sky. She drives away, and the phone booth hits, and they're still alive. And I'm guessing we're in cartoon-ish now,
yeah.
Because feel of the movie is they are on a mission from God, so they are being looked after by a higher source.
Okay, that makes more sense. That's, yeah.
That's never explained. That's just how I'm justifying it.
Dan Aykroyd once said when he was in the high voltage area parking the car, that's where they got their powers. Not a quote. Not really a quote. But so, yeah. And then I guess there was a joke set up. They're like, they only had 25 cents left. And silver lining, after the phone booth crashes, they find all these quarters spilled out. And there's like, there must be like $7.25 here. So, win for everybody.
Win. We go back on the road, and now the band,
the country
they're
bar?
In two bar they're in two cars, by the way. They're in the Bluesmobile, and then they have this purple Cadillac, I guess, which was the Murph and the Magic Tones vehicle, but spray painted on the side now is the Blues Brothers band. They're driving along, and the band is getting pissed. He's like, okay, we've been in this car for 3 hours, where's the next gig? And Jake's bullshitting them. Well, I told you'd be a while. And then they see the sign for Bob's Country Bunker. And it's like, here we are. And they pull up and it says, tonight only the good old boys. And the band is like, what's going on? And Jake is like, oh no, it should be tonight. The triumphant return of the Blues Brothers.
King of the bullshit, Jim Belushi in this movie.
John Belushi.
John Belushi, excuse me. I was thinking, yeah. So John Belushi, yeah, he's I guess his charisma is what gets him going. Cause he goes in and he's like, I'll handle it. Y'all stay out here. And he goes into this like podunk, you know,
bar. Yes. Out of the two, Jake definitely has the personality because as we said before, Elwood is sort of monotone. His attitude doesn't change, but Jake goes in. And he's like, hey, we're the band. How you doing? Blah, 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 blah. You know, he's the ultimate bullshitter.
Well, now, what can I get you boys? You thirsty? You hungry? Or are you just driving through? Maybe like a beer or something a little harder. Hey, you know, we happen to make the state's best pepper steak.
No, thank you, ma'am. We may be sucking back a few beers a little later on. We'll be here all night. You see, we're the band.
You are? Oh, gee, that's nice. Hey, Bob, this is the band.
All right.
What kind of music do you usually have here?
Oh, we got both kinds. We got country and western.
Jake, are you sure this is the place?
Yeah, sure, this is the place.
Hey, you the good old boys?
That's us. The rest of the band's out in the parking lot getting our stuff together.
Well, I'm sure glad to have you boys here. I'm Bob, and this here is my place.
Well, it's a beautiful place, Bob.
I guess you boys want to get your steel guitars and everything set up on the stage, don't you? Claire, go up there and turn those stage lights on and get these boys going up there.
Chicken wire?
What do you say we set up for a sound check?
Excuse me, Sonny. I guess I'll give this to you. You're the tallest one.
Okay. What is it?
Well, that there is a list of the songs that you boys will be playing tonight.
Which I think is why he was mad that Elwood bullshitted him, because the one thing a bullshitter hates is to be bullshitted.
So they sit down at the bar. Yeah, they say we're the band, and they give him a couple of beers. And so they're like, yep, that's us. And so they flip on the stage lights, which are just, you know, a few switches, and it lights up a stage filled with, like, covered in chicken wire. And so the whole band eventually gets in, and they're like, what's going on? Oh, what happens? The bar owner goes up to the tallest guy and says, oh, you must be in charge. Oh, what's that?
No, that's, I was going to point that out too, because that happens to me all the time. Whenever I'm in a room, I'm about 6'4". I'm right around 6'4". And yeah, people will come up to me with and start talking to me like I'm in charge just because I'm the tallest. Now, the ironic part is usually I'm the dumbest guy in the room. So I'm the tallest guy and the dumbest guy in the room. But that is a thing where people associate tall people with being in charge. That is, I've read articles on it. That is definitely a thing.
Oh, yeah. What is it? I forget the statistics, but like X number percentage of CEOs are over 6 feet or something. You could have been a CEO.
I could have been. But I thought that was a real funny throwaway line. It's like, I'll give this to you because you're the tallest.
Well, you've experienced it a lot. I have not, because I'm 5'7"-ish, 5'8"-ish, somewhere in that bracket.
And they get a playlist, and it's all country songs. Because one of the funniest, another funny line in this movie is, Elle would ask, what kind of music do you like here? And they go, oh, we have both kinds of music, country and western.
So they get set up on stage. And we find out what the cage is for, why it's covered in chicken wire, once they start playing.
They start playing Gimme Some Lovin', boo, immediately, boo, boo, and they start throwing beer at the chicken wire. And then the owner of the club goes, that ain't Hank Williams Jr. And he turns off the stage lights, and then the band is scrambling. It's like, we got to find something that they want to hear. And then they start playing the theme to Rawhide.
Yep.
Rollin'.
So it sounded like John Belushi. Was that Dan Aykroyd singing, or did they dub over?
That was Dan singing that song.
Okay, that was really good. Yes. He could get deep.
Yes, he can. Belushi sings 95% of the Blues Brothers song, and there's only a few that Dan sings, and this is one of them.
Okay. So yeah, they sing this, and it starts turning the.
It starts turning.
They still throw stuff.
They start turning.
They
the
still
tie,
throw
yes.
stuff, but
and then
but they're happy.
And then they start singing. Sometimes it's hard to be a woman. And this is a duet with Belushi and Aykroyd. People are, you know, and we see all these redneck guys starting to cry. And
they're getting with their partners. And
we cut to the end of the night. We want to see you. They end with the Rawhide scene. And then in the minute the music stops, Belushi is like, let's get the hell out of here.
And I like this. This was a fun setup, too, because it was the bar owner comes up and goes, hey, you know, thanks. That was good. And John leans over and goes, okay, well, what about payment? And he's like, well, we owe you $200. And John shakes his head and he's smiling kind of, but you drank $300 worth of beer.
Elwood goes, well, the first two beers were on the house, so we thought the beers were complimentary. And he's like, oh, no, no, no. So I looked it up online. Somebody figured it out. $100 worth of beer. It broke down to like 20. So there's 11, 8, there's 10 people. It broke down to like 20 beers per bandmate for that night. To drink $100 worth of beer in 1980, each band member, 10 of them, would have to have drank 20 beers apiece.
And they drank 300.
They drank 300 beers.
They drank $300 worth.
They drank $100 worth. No, they drank $300 worth of beer, yes. So they owe them 100. That's what it broke down to. 20 beers per person.
I've had some nights, yeah. But nowhere near that close.
Well, Jake and Elwood realize, well, we can't pay for that, so they try to skip out. And before they can skip out, the real band shows up. And they're like, it's like the place is closed. I don't know what they expected getting
there. Yeah, what were they? Yeah. Sorry we're late. No, you missed
it. And also, this is a bit of movie magic. The Blues Brothers just happen to be there on the night where they're late. It's like, okay, that's a bit coincidental. I'm going to let it slide because it's great. But it's like that's a million to one shot that they at random pick this bar that has a band that just happens to be late.
At the exact same time, yes. The Blues Brothers are leaving. movie magic. You can write anything.
You can write anything.
But this is where some more, like, Jake magic comes in, because he's like, I'll handle it. And he walks over, pulls out a pack of cigarettes, flashes it real quick, puts it back in his pocket, and talks about, like, we need your union cards if you're playing in this band, because this is a bar that, you know, is you know, needs your information this way. And kind of spooks off the country. They didn't, I'm sorry, not spook them off, but they start like questioning, like, what are you talking about, union? He's like, I'll get it worked out. I'll go talk to the bar owner for you. Don't worry about it.
So he walks back to the bar owner who's pissed. He's like, you owed me a lot of money for that beer. And he's like, oh, we're going to a traveler's check. He's like, my brother's making out a traveler's check. I got to get in the car and sign it with them. They get in the car and drive away. The good old boys and the bar owner are like, you know, oh, you're the good old boys? Yeah. It's like, and then we see Jake and Elwood driving away, and they both have these smug smiles on their face like they got away with it. But they start getting chased by the good old boys and their Winnebago. They pulled up in a Winnebago. So now Bob, the owner of the bar, and the good old boys are in this Winnebago. You know, the head good old boy pulls out this shotgun and just blows out their back window. Elwood floors it. And they drive past this. Okay, so here's a little hint. They drive past this billboard, and there's a movie with this giant ape attacking a city, and the name of the movie is See You Next Wednesday.
Ah.
And that is a running gag in all the movies, and I should have looked up what it means, but in all the movies that John Landis directs, there is a movie poster where the movie is called See You Next Wednesday. It's a different movie poster every movie, but that's the name of the movie. So if you look through all of his movies, you will see a movie poster or a billboard that has the See You Next Tuesday on it.
I need to look that
yes.
up.
Yes, we probably, we'll look it up.
Yeah, you'll put it in post.
No, I won't. Okay, here it is. See You Next Wednesday is a recurring gag in most of the films directed by John Landis, usually referring to a fictional film that is rarely seen and never in its time. Okay. All right, you know what? This is like the fifth fucking time I've tried to record this about See You Next Wednesday, and I just can't get it. So you know what? It's on fucking Wikipedia. Look it up. See You Next Wednesday. They drive past this billboard, and behind the billboard are the two cops that are after them. And one of them goes, holy shit, it's that shitbox Dodge. And they pull out, and they hit the back of the Winnebago, who's still chasing them. They both cars flip over. The Winnebago hits a fire hydrant. Water starts flowing, and everybody's crawling out, and the cops pull their guns and arrest the good old boys and Bob.
Which makes another vendetta. So we have two other, yes. The bar owner and the good old boys are now after.
Usually in a movie, when you introduce characters later in the movie, it works for this movie. That's usually not a good idea for most movies, introducing characters. Like, we're over an hour into the movie. We're still introducing characters. That usually doesn't work. It works for this movie.
Because they're more piling on to the the group that is the character that's after Elwood and Jake. Maybe that's why it works.
It works because these are all, like we said before, it's a cartoon movie. There's nothing about... The cops are just cops. The rednecks are just rednecks. The only one that has a backstory, which we will find out, is Carrie Fisher. We don't learn anything else about these people. They're just a means to an end.
And then we cut to... They jump to the sauna, where they actually have a meeting with the...
Harry Slime, the booking agent, played Steve Lawrence. So, you know, another famous person in here.
And they're talking to him and, like, trying to haggle. Again, it's Jake kind of doing his charisma thing.
So what happened was Steve Lawrence's character is married, but we find out earlier in the movie that Jake got him laid. So now he's using that against him. He's like, how's Mrs. Slime? I might have some information. So he's blackmailing him. He's like, well, you ever hear, I forget the name of the place, but it's like this big hotel in Lake Wazapamonte. You fill that, you'll make $5,000 each.
And I appreciate this because it's a really nice, tight shot with the two Blues Brothers and then the booking agent, because it's setting up for a reveal in a moment. And it was a funny joke. It got me.
And he's like, book us for tomorrow. He's like, tomorrow? What the? And they convince him. He's like, okay, I'll book you for tomorrow. I don't think you're going to make dollar one, but if you do, I want a piece of the action.
But he says he'll front the money and get the posters.
Yes, I'll get the flyers. Posters up. I'll make the place look real pretty. So then they leave, and
well, the joke that is they pull her out and they're like, "Deal, all right, boys, come on." And it pulls back, and we see the whole band sitting in the sauna with everybody, like off into a corner.
Right, but that joke, I watched the trailer. That joke is in the trailer, so that joke would have been given away in the trailer.
So yeah, then they start getting the word out
they
to the community.
They start getting the word out. There's a small scene where we're back at the orphanage with Clarence, and Clarence is, not Clarence, Cab Calloway's character,
Curtis.
And he's with all the little boys and girls, and he's like, okay, they're singing for you, so we're going to take it to the streets. So they all pile into a car, and they have a bunch of posters. They're going to start spreading the posters throughout the streets. And then we cut to a playground, and we cut to a speaker, but like a giant megaphone.
He has a huge, yeah.
A huge megaphone, and they steal it, and they put it on top of the Bluesmobile. So they're driving around, and Dan is like, you know, tonight, one night only, Blues Brothers, Rhythm and Blues Review. And it's a really cool setup. They have like this rope strung across their car, and the microphone is just in front of Dan's mouth. So he's driving, and John is in the passenger seat, you know, marking off. We've hit this area. So they're cutting back and forth between the kids. Like the kids, we see the kids go to Aretha Franklin, and she rolls her eyes when she gets a poster. And then we cut to Ray's music exchange, and he hangs the poster up upside down. We cut to a urinal where the good old boys are taking a piss, and it's written on the wall. This eventually leads to their downfall. Because of this gig, the good old boys and Bob know where they're at. The cops know where they're at. Carrie Fisher, she always knows where they're at. So I don't know how she finds out. She's got a sixth sense when it comes to this. Now that everybody who was after them knows where they're going to be because of these posters. But there is a very nice scene where all the little boys and girls, you know, we go from one child to another. Ladies and gentlemen, one night tonight, it's the Blues Brothers. And it ends with Elwood. I'm explaining it poorly, but it goes from child to child to child, and it ends with Elwood promoting the Blues Brothers. It's a very nicely edited scene.
Check it out! Check it out! Tonight only from Chicago, the Blues Brothers, Rhythm and Blues Review. One night only, the fabulous
Blues Brothers, show band and review.
And so they finally, they mark off the map, and he goes, "Okay, we did this area." And they start making their way back to town.
Yes.
And that's, is this where we run out of gas?
We run out of gas. Uh-oh, we're out of gas. And and we're both of us are doing a very poor impression of Elwood.
Yeah.
Of,
I thought I was doing a good one.
No, we're both doing poor ones.
Not at all.
We're out of gas. The thing is, Dan is speaking in this accent. Belushi is just speaking in his regular voice. He's not modulating his voice at all.
Yeah. I assume it was like a, you know, interesting maybe tweak of a, or rendition of a Chicago accent.
I'm sure it was.
Chicago.
Dan is Canadian, and Belushi grew up in Chicago. He grew up in Illinois. Yes.
Oh, okay.
He was born and raised in Illinois. So one of the problems was Belushi did Second City in Chicago, and Belushi was like a king of Chicago. Everybody loved him. So one of the problems was he would go out and people would just give him cocaine all the time in little baggies.
Hmm.
He could go everywhere. He'd get everywhere for free. People always wanted to do it. So he was the king of Chicago, which did not help the cause because he was just getting wrecked every night going out.
Yeah, just hedonism. Yes. And just like too much of
everything. Too much of everything. Not only did Belushi, I think this is overlooked a lot. I mean, well, he smoked like a chimney, as my father would say, a chimney. And he ate constantly. So he just indulged in that. It wasn't only drugs, but it was drugs and drinking and smoking and eating. It was like all, you know, whatever he did to the fullest.
Yeah.
And being in Chicago, I mean, at this point, Belushi was a star. Everybody knew him. But being in Chicago, it was like being a star on top of a star. It was like the hometown kid who made good.
Yeah, this is your hometown. And yeah.
Because while he was there, he like stop into Second City and make guest appearances on the stage while this movie was shooting. An interesting fact, I'm sorry, I've gotten off a couple of tangents here.
No.
And I may have to call you in to do this one, is while this movie was shooting, Cheech and Chong were shooting their movie, their second movie. It was close to where they were shooting, and then they shot in Chicago, but they also did some stuff in L.A. with this movie.
Yeah,
and while they were doing, you know, pickups in L.A., they were next to Cheech and Chong. Dan went onto their set, and Dan actually directed a couple of scenes of that movie.
Oh.
So technically, Dan Aykroyd directed parts of Cheech and Chong's next movie, and so
that's really cool.
Might be an interesting one to do.
Yeah,
but back to where we're at. So they've run out of gas. And the band shows up at the hotel where they're playing, and it's like, it's a barn. We're never going to fill it.
Packed.
Curtis shows up, and it's like, you need to... Jake and Elwood has not told the band. It's like, you're basically working for free, because any money we make is going to the orphanage.
Yep,
and
yep.
Curtis tells them, and, you know, the band is a bunch of softies. They're like, okay, fine. So now the...
At least it's a good
cause. It's a good cause. So now the band knows. Jake and Elwood pull up to this...
They push the car to a gas station.
And the gas station is out of gas. So now they have to wait.
That was a fun little...
It's like, yeah.
Out of gas? Yeah, we're out of gas. Like, no, we're out of gas.
Tanker's running late. And while this is happening, Twiggy pulls up. And Twiggy was one of the first supermodels.
Ah, okay.
That's who she was. She was like this rail... And she got her name because she was like rail thin. But she was one of the first supermodels of the 70s. And she pulls in and she mistakes Elwood as one of the attendants. Elwood starts flirting with her. So this is going to become significant later after we find out the Carrie Fisher and John Belushi. Elwood pretends to fill up her car, tells her about the band, about the gig tonight. She's like, maybe I'll show up. And he's like, well, if your date doesn't work out, there's a motel. Why don't we meet? And Twiggy's like blowing him off.
Yeah.
And Dan, who doesn't put any gas in her car, goes, that'll be $94. And he's like, and she's like, okay, and he just get, and that's $94 in 1980s money. So,
yeah,
because he just makes a number up off the top of. He goes, okay, that'll be $94.
I was gonna think this one is interesting because it's another character introduction, but I think to your point, a little bit, it kind of gets snipped off. I mean, they kind of pay it off at the end, but we'll get there.
And once again, this is, we see Jake, he's drinking a Mad Dog or whatever, 2020 Night Train or something. He's drinking this really cheap wine, and he looks at his watch. He just runs over to Elwood. We gotta go! And slaps him on the shoulder. He's like, ow!
Well, one of the things is, when the guy was saying the tanker's late, Elwood was tying off with a handkerchief or something. He put it in the car and he tied the handle that pumps the gas to just constantly be open, and they just put it in there. And so during the when he's flirting with Twiggy, the tanker comes up and starts filling up the car. So gas is just spilling out of their car because it's beyond full. So, yeah, he hits them and says, we got to go. We got to get out of here. And they both jump in the car. And Belushi has been smoking cigarettes this whole time. So he pulls out. I mean, I guess he's finishing up a cigarette. And as they're going, he flicks the cigarette out.
Right. And the cigarette hits the gas and the gas station just blows up behind him.
Boom.
Probably killing a man.
You're probably,
that man is dead.
More
no,
destruction.
No, no, no. And he's not walking away. It's not one of those A-teams, you know, and where the guy just stumbles out. That guy is dead.
The only guy to die in the movie. So the gas station blows up, but they're booking it. And then we cut back to the stadium or the venue, and it's packed.
It's $2 a ticket. And it seats 5,000. So it's $2 a ticket. So I guess they're making $10,000. Now, and they have to figure out how to get that money, get the money from the booker to the orphanage. That's going to be solved a little conveniently, but anyway. But they're chanting, start the show, start the show, start the show. Yeah. And the band is getting, band's like, we're leaving.
Yeah.
And then Cab Calloway goes, you guys know Minnie the Moocher? And they go, I once knew a hooker named Minnie Missoula. No, the song. And then Cab Calloway does this elegant 1930s version of Minnie the Moocher. The story was, John Landis, that Cab Calloway wanted to do a disco version, being 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what John Landis wanted. And apparently him and Cab Calloway butted heads on that. And, you know, John Landis got his way, and the movie is much better. This movie would not have worked with a disco version of Minnie the Moocher.
I mean, this was a powerful, like, jaw-dropping scene. If nothing else, go see this clip.
But the curtains open, and the band is all in tuxedos. It's this, and Cab Calloway is in this kick-ass white tuxedo, belts out Minnie the Moocher.
Rocks it. Flawlessly. I mean, an amazing rendition of the song. Go see that. So he sings his number. Everybody starts cheering.
While he's singing this number, we see Jake and Elwood trying to get into the building. While they're getting to the building,
that's right.
He does a couple of things. One,
I forgot because the cops pulled up, right? And this is when during that song. Right before Cab Calloway swings, or
I
during?
I think it's right before. The Blues Brothers are pulled up underneath the hotel. There's like a tunnel underneath the hotel. They start walking towards the venue, and we pan up, and the place is just swarming with police officers.
And the good old boys. And the bar owner. And the
parole
officer.
And everybody's there. Everybody who's after the Blues Brothers is there. We don't see Carrie Fisher yet, but she is there.
That's when
they're making their way through the parking lot. They stop at the good old boys Winnebago. Dan puts glue on the accelerator pedal. He's like, this is glue. Strong stuff. He goes to one of the cop cars and he puts something in it. He's like, this is pure concentrated CO2 mixed with air and a little heat.
It was a chemical that when it heats up or something, it expands rapidly.
I don't know. I don't know where he got that.
When he was in the factory, he pulled two mystery cans off the conveyor belt.
I thought they were both glue, but that's probably explained. So they're sabotaging vehicles on the way in. They finally get in. They sneak past all the cops, and they're ready to come on stage. And then they catch Cab Calloway's eyes, and then this is a great intro. And they start playing, and then the Blues Brothers hit the stage to dead silence.
One, two, three, four. Tour of Europe, Scandinavia, and the subcontinent. Won't you welcome from Calumet City, Illinois, the show band of Joey and Jake and Elwood Blues, the Blues Brothers.
And then they start singing everybody, and this is where we sort of get Dan, because Dan introduces the song. We want to thank all you lovely people for coming out tonight, and we want to thank, you know, the Illinois State Patrol, and it's a great song. John and Dan, they're dancing along, the band's kicking ass, and great choreography, great shots, and
the crowd starts rocking.
They finish to uproarious applause. And then they start breaking into Sweet Home Chicago. So there's a scene that we forgot. John Candy with the officers, and they're sitting up. He's like, need to arrest them. And John Candy's like, I haven't heard these boys sing, all right? And then apparently there's waitstaff there, because he's like, orange whip,
three orange whips.
And that was an improvised line. That was not in the script. John Candy improvised it right there on the spot.
Is orange whip a thing?
It was a drink at the time. It's still a drink now, but it is a drink. I don't know what is in it, but it is a drink. So he orders the orange whip. They start playing Sweet Home Chicago. Dan and John dance off to the wing. They're not in view of everybody. And a record producer.
How do we get out of here?
Yeah, a record producer says, I want to record you guys. And they go, it's bullshit. It goes, I don't bullshit. Here's a $5,000 advance. I'm like, bam.
$20,000. It was $20,000.
No, I'll pay you $20,000, and here's a $5,000 advance. Oh no! You're right. No, it's $10,000.
No, because he gives $14,000 to the. I mean, it's minutia, but they leave some money for the band.
He gives them $10,000. They take $5,000.
Okay.
They go give $1,400 to Ray's Music Exchange.
Gotcha.
And then give the rest to the band. And the guy's like, "Fine."
There you go.
And he goes, "We need to get out of here." And he goes, "Oh, I was a bouncer here in the '70s."
By the way,
there's a trap door behind the drums. They crawl out. While they're crawling out, they give the drummer, it's like, you guys keep playing. Elwood and I are going to make a break for it. Drummer gives them the salute.
Good to go.
And then they start playing. And then everybody realizes that the Blues Brothers are not on the stage. You know, like, where's the Blues Brothers? Where are the Blues Brothers? Then we cut to them running through the tunnels. And now we see Carrie Fisher. And this is the first time she speaks. We didn't mention that she has said absolutely no lines up until this time. No lines.
And this was just after Star Wars, right? Like all three movies?
This was 1980. Star Wars was out, and I don't know when. This was 1980, and that's when the Empire Strike Back came out. So she was hot property.
Yes,
she was Princess Leia at this time.
And no lines up until this point. That's why I was like,
now,
yeah, it's amazing.
Carrie Fisher and Dan Aykroyd got engaged on this movie. They were dating. They're walking through the tunnels, and then Carrie Fisher jumps out with this assault rifle and starts peppering all around Jake and Elwood. And Elwood's just like, who is she?
Yeah.
And Jake goes, no
why?
So what happens is Jake used her and then stood her up at the altar, literally left her at the altar. And she runs through all the things that her father went through to get that wedding.
Oh, and that was a list.
Then Jake gets on his knees and it's like, oh, please don't kill us. And he goes through a list. And my tux didn't come back from the cleaners. My car ran out of gas. A friend came out of from Locust. For the love of God, it wasn't my fault.
Every excuse you can imagine.
And you could see the look in her eyes. It's like she's fallen for it. And then he takes off his glasses. So that's the only time you see his eyes in this movie.
Yeah.
From what I've read and heard, Landis was like, can't be hungover. We've got to see your eyes.
You have to look
good. And he did.
Yeah.
He stayed straight for as long as it took him to get that shot. We really need to convey through your eyes in that scene. And she falls for it again, which we go back to Elwood trying to seduce Twiggy, it's like, oh, this is a family trait because Jake did this to Carrie Fisher. And then he kisses her, throws her in the mud, and lets go. And
let's go.
And Elwood's like, catch you later. And they get out to the car, and then we get one of the most famous lines in movie history. This line gets quoted a lot. It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's night, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it! And they drive off, and they're in this tunnel. So the tunnel knocks off the megaphone or the speaker off the top of their car. And as they drive away, everybody unloads on them. Carrie Fisher unloads, the cops unload. So everybody is shooting bullets at the Blues Brothers at this point.
And so people start getting in their cars and stuff, and tires start exploding. Yes. Not immediately, but as this as their tires heat up, whatever chemical got in rapidly expands and blows up their tires, causing. But then nothing. It's still like a massive.
Yes,
pursuit.
I mean no. There's. I'll talk about it later, but there is a massive pursuit. And one of the people pursuing them is the good old boys and Bob in the Winnebago. As we said, Elwood put glue on the accelerator. Not only is the accelerator stuck to the bottom of the car, his foot is stuck on the accelerator, so he can't let up. So you see this Winnebago just passing cop cars. And they eventually pass the Blues Brothers. And they drive off this bridge into the lake. You cut inside the car, and the head good old boy just says, he just takes a beat and goes, don't you say a fucking word. And that's, so now the good old boys. So Carrie Fisher, out. Good old boys, out.
And so we're starting to go through the chase, and we're starting to pick off, we eventually pick off John Candy as
so
well.
Now we
like
cut
they do
to,
a jump.
They've been traveling all night. It's daytime now, and they're getting close to Chicago. While all this is happening, we keep cutting to, you know, the National Guard is now being called in. The Army is being called in. The Marines are being called in. So we see helicopters, and we see military vehicles, and we see soldiers. Hup, 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 hup. This just keeps building and building and building to all of these people after the Blues Brothers. We see them going through Chicago, and they're driving. We look at the speedometer, and they're doing 120 miles an hour. They were actually going that fast. Yes, the stunt drivers were actually going that fast. They said they, you know, they were shooting on Saturday morning and Sunday mornings, but they were actually going that fast.
Okay, that's one way to do it, or you could just turn the speedometer up.
Well, it was like they wanted to capture it, which they did. So all these cops are following them. They cause a giant pileup of cop cars. So all these cop cars pile up. For a moment, they've lost. Oh, I'm sorry. But before this happens, John Candy is in the squad car with the two troopers that are following him. And they jump a medium and end up in the back of a truck.
I gotta pull over.
Southbound on State Highway 470.
What number are we?
55.
Car 55. We're in a truck.
So John Candy and the state troopers out. But they've temporarily shaken the police, and after they've shaken the police, now the Nazis, which we might have forgotten about, are still.
Yep.
So the Nazis pull out and start following them and start shooting at them. There's two Nazi cars, and they get split up somehow. So the Bluesmobile is driving on this bridge that is out. They're plowing through all these roads, and they get to the end of the bridge, and they stop, and Elwood throws it in reverse, and the car flips, somersaults
behind.
One of the Nazi cars heads off the other way, and then one of the Nazi cars in a Toyota just pulls off the bridge and just drops. So they had to do that car for the movie. It was dropped from a helicopter. It was within city limits. What happened was they had to prove when they dropped the car, it would not sway. So they did a couple of test runs where they dropped this car and it went straight down. So they proved that if you drop the car, it will go straight down. It will, you know, the wind won't affect it. So while the car is being dropped, one of the Nazis turns to the head Nazi and goes, "I've always loved you." The car hits the ground. The Bluesmobile jumps over the hole, and then the other Nazi car drives on top of the Nazi.
So comic, 100% yes. Cartoonish. But in this moment,
the Nazis are not on a mission from God, so. So there's at least two other people that died.
Which is okay. So Nazis, gone.
So now all the people who had individual vendettas against the Blues Brothers are not. So now it's just the police, the masses are after the Blues Brothers.
We're driving. Do they go under? They just start plowing through and they finally make it to the courthouse?
Yes, they have to get to the Cook County Assessor's Office to pay the taxes. And they finally get there. And once they get there, the Bluesmobile just falls apart right in front of them. And Dan takes his hat off like you would at a funeral. And they run into the building. What floor is the tax assessor's office on? He's like, 15th floor. Elevator's down at the end of the hall. Thank you. And they run down and they get in the elevator. And there's a nice juxtaposition where they're going up the elevator to elevator music, and then we see everybody else just swarming on this building. We see SWAT taking, you know, perches up in the higher buildings. We see the army roll, you know, doing barrel rolls and coming up with their guns. It's
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of extras, like it to comical proportions, like the just massive amounts of people, like setting up for. Just, I don't even know what they think is going to happen.
In one of the radio, you hear all the stuff coming over the radio, an unnecessary force to capture the Blues Brothers has been approved.
And as the Blues Brothers are going through doors, they just barricade it as much as possible with stuff that's around.
Yes, they go up the elevator, and once they reach the floor that the office is on, once again, Elwood takes the panel off the elevator and burns all the circuits with the aerosol glue and Jake's lighter. So now they can't use the elevator to get up. And then they, like you said, they barricade the stairs door. Get into the office, and they barricade the office door, and then they're about to go in the office, and there's a sign that says, "Back in 5 minutes."
Supreme, like, just great timing. Of just all of this buildup to just like, oh, now we have to wait. Because like you said, like going up the elevator was like a nice still moment juxtaposed with just all the chaos of everybody prepping up. And then we have more chaos of like the elevator blowing up, them blockading the doors. And just they build such great intensity of like, hurry, 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 hurry. And then boom.
But one thing we forgot to say is, while this chase is going, we cut to the hotel and Twiggy is there. So Twiggy actually took Elwood up on his proposition to meet at a hotel to have a one night stand.
Oh, that's right.
So after it's like a really brief, nice scene. This woman fell for his line and she's waiting for him at a hotel, which he had no intention of going to.
I guess 5 minutes passes, it's not 5 minutes. I think the guy kind of peeks his head out and they bum rush him.
And that is,
I don't know. Who is that?
Steven Spielberg.
That's Steven Spielberg? Holy cow.
Because the year before, Steven Spielberg made 1941, which starred Belushi and Aykroyd, And John Landis had a cameo in that movie. So I think they were just trading cameos amongst friends. But yes, that was Steven Spielberg.
Wow. Now I gotta, and happily, I'll rewatch this movie and know even more. Because I was just starstruck with just the ones I knew.
And once again, while all this is happening, everybody is swarming this building. They're shooting up this building. They're shooting up doors to get through. They're running up the stairs.
They're rappelling down
the building. The whole schmear.
Yeah, they get to the counter clerk and they put him to work. They're like, okay, your break's over, essentially. And he calmly like fills out like a piece of paper and they hand him the money.
And when he hands them their receipt, they're handcuffed together. You look around and the whole room is filled with people pointing guns at the Blues Brothers.
And yeah, it's pistols, it's handguns, it's rifles. It's a beautiful scene. Like also, cause they, I mean, there's probably like 100 guns.
It's Steven Spielberg is looking like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh no, that's it. Then we cut to, inside the jail?
They start playing Jailhouse Rock.
Yep.
So they're in jail. I guess the band got arrested too. I don't know if the band got arrested or they're just in jail, but I guess the band got arrested too.
They're in
prison
the suit,
garb,
right?
As well. And they're playing in the lunchroom and they're playing Jailhouse Rock. If you go back and rewatch this, one of the inmates is Joe Walsh from the Eagles. He's the one that starts the riot. He's the one that gets up the table and starts dancing. You know, we get the credits. Jailhouse Rock is playing, but we see guards start swarming, and then it cuts abruptly, and then we get the credits, and that's the Blues Brothers.
It was a good movie. I came into this kind of just knowing very little about it, but just, you know, it's in the lexicon of everybody, you know, so I knew the most famous quote, the, you know, we got a tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, we're on a mission from God, but it's something that people should watch.
A couple of things. At that point, that movie held the world record for cars wrecked in a chase scene in a movie.
That makes a lot of sense.
It was broken 2 years later, and now one of the Matrix movies holds the record now. But at the time, it had the most car wrecks in the movie, and at the time, it had the longest credits of any movie at about 5.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the Lord of the Ring movies has a 10-minute credits.
Is that, with this movie, I would assume it's more of the cast.
Well, it's
because
the cast and all the stunt people and all that, yeah. And that's it. And that's, so one thing I love little things. So this is a Universal movie. So do you remember, have you ever seen or remember the movie Animal House?
I do not remember it. I've seen clips and bits and pieces here.
So John Landis directed Animal House. One of the characters in Animal House, she goes on to work at Universal Studios. She's a guide at Universal Studios. So whenever John Landis does a movie for Universal, at the end of the movie, if you watch it to the very, very end, it says, visit Universal Studios, and in parentheses, it says, ask for Babs, which was the character's name in Animal House. It's a callback to the character to the first movie he ever directed. It's little stuff like that that I just think is really, really cool.
Yeah. I wonder if there's something that you can get done in, like, because, you know, Disney has all those kind of like secret little code words and whatnot and, you know, little things. I wonder if that does something at Universal, or people just roll their eyes and they're like, what are you talking about?
I don't think this was, like I said, 40 years ago. So, and your first time watching experience?
It was, like I said, like starting out, it was like a little like, wait, what's going on? But just having like very star-studded cast, maybe not at the time, but I mean, as stuff has progressed, like hearing some of the musicians and giving them a venue to display some of, you know, just maybe some of the best music in my mind, just makes it that much better.
Yes, this definitely, the Blues Brothers album in this movie definitely gave a boost to the blues music. It gave it a resurgence. Yeah, it's 2.5 hours, and it doesn't feel like it. The music is great. The comedy is great. The action is great. It's just, it holds a 7.9 on IMDb. Movies usually don't hold that. Usually, like comedies, it's like, oh, it's just a brain dead comedy. It's like, no, this movie, Belushi made so few movies. It's always good to see him. It's like some scenes you could tell where Belushi might have been out of it a little. And then there's other scenes where it was like he was spot on. You could see the comedy genius. But I definitely could see some scenes where he might have been out of it, you know, might not have been at his best.
Do you, I mean, from your opinion, like, do you have one or two that where he's out of it and then two of them where he just rocks it?
Like, there's a couple of scenes where they're driving in the, it's like in the mall. There's a couple of scenes where he's like, oh, he's on. And then there's a couple of scenes where he's just sitting back and he looks sweaty. And he doesn't look engaged with Dan. And it's really weird.
She's just like out of it.
He just looks out of it. And I'm sure these scenes were shot over a series of days. That's why they don't match. But when he's on, when he's singing, those backflips. And he hurt him. I never knew about the stunt where he rolled down the stairs and hurt his back. But in that scene where they're dancing in the hall, he fell off the stage and hurt his knee. You know, no, he put his body into, you know, probably led more to his addiction. Because Dan said, and this would never happen today, part of the budget of the movie went to cocaine. Because there was a lot of night shoots, and they had to stay up at night.
Yeah. But coming out of the budget, that's...
It was incorporated,
right.
It wasn't coming out of the budget. It was incorporated into the budget. Yes.
Into the budget.
No, there was an allotted amount of money for cocaine. They weren't taking it from stunts or wardrobe. It was written in the I'm sure it wasn't written in the contract, but there was a portion of that. This is one of my all-time favorite movies. I love watching it. You know, I love the music. One of the things, and this is a nitpick, is there's a couple of blue screens when they're driving, which really stands out because most of the movie is not, it's, you can actually see Dan and John.
It's 100%.
You know, there's cameras. So the few blue screens or green screens when they're driving really stands out because the ones where they're not just looks fantastic. But that is just a nitpick on my part.
Does this movie, like, you've probably seen it a number of times. It's because it's, you said your favorite movie?
No, it's one of my favorites.
Like, I mean, it must carry like a lot of nostalgia. If do you have, like, for Christmas, like I'll watch Home Alone, or for, you know, Halloween, I'll watch Nightmare Before Christmas, or Groundhog's Day, I'll watch Groundhog's Day. Is this on and it could just be my obsession, but when do you throw this movie on? When are you inspired to go back and go, you know what? I'm feeling some Blues Brothers.
Well, it's, I mean,
or have you just, you know it, and you can play it in your head?
I know it, and I can play it in my head. I'm with you. I have certain movies that I watch at certain holidays. Like right now, I'm in the middle of my, you know, this is going to come out in January, but this is we are like 2 weeks before Christmas while we're recording this. So I have my Christmas movies and I have my Halloween movies, but I'll just be in the mood and I'll just put it in. There's not a specific time of year where I'll watch this. I'll realize, like, I haven't watched this in a while. I was like, yeah, I'll pop it in. And it's like, last time I watched, like I said, when I reviewed Blues Brothers 2000, I had to watch it. It's just like, just to get the taste of the Blues Brothers 2000 out of my eyes. It's and I'm glad that the sequel hasn't tarnished the original. A lot of sequels do that. And I think there was enough time, and I think people cut, it's like Belushi wasn't in the sequel, and I understand Dan's perspective. It's like he loves these characters and he doesn't want to see him die, but he still goes on tour with Jim Belushi and John Goodman. He still has these characters.
Yeah.
It's like, I just don't know how the Blues Brothers 2000 was such a swing and a miss. And John Landis directed it. So John Landis was on, you know, he directed that movie as well. To me, this is, it's just mind-blowing how they could just hit so hard on one and miss so much on another.
Maybe just a change in the industry, like you were talking about.
Well, it was 17 years later. So for those of you who don't know, the Blues Brothers 2000 picks up where Elwood released from jail from this, from all the mayhem. So he spent 17 years in jail. Jake has died in jail. That's how they explain that. If you want any more information, like I said, go see my Blues Brothers 2000 review. or podcast, yeah. podcast/review.
Before we go, like, this movie, just to reiterate, I think it's fun. Excuse me. I think it's fun if you watch it and you're like paying attention, engaged, because you pick up some of the comedy. But even if you're just throwing this on and it's playing in the background, you have amazing tunes that are going on. So it works for one of those, like, kind of, you know, set it and kind of just have noise.
Yes, like,
and it also works as sitting down and watching.
If you were, it's Christmas time. So if you were to decorate your tree, this would be a good movie to have in the background, because, you know, even if you weren't catching the dialogue, you'd catch the music. All right, Will, what do you want to promote?
You can always email me at www.will.com@gmail.com, or I'm on Instagram as Gnome on the Go with periods in between, or TikTok as Bad Bald Boss.
All right, that's it. Happy New Year, everybody. Hope this year is
a great year
for everybody, and we hope to keep you as a listener, and we'll see you next time.
To support this podcast, please go to www.patreon.com/ScottWhite and give what you're able. If you're listening on iTunes, please give a review. That should help people find this podcast. And no matter what services you use to listen, please leave feedback. We always want to improve. Thank you for listening to the Dan Aykroyd Podcast.
Good to see you, sweetheart.
You contemptible pig. I remained celibate for you. I stood at the back of a cathedral, waiting in celibacy for you, with 300 friends and relatives in attendance. My uncle hired the best Romanian caterers in the state. To obtain the 7 limousines for the wedding party, my father used up his last favors with Mad Pete Trullo. So for me, for my mother, my grandmother, my father, my uncle, and for the common good, I must now kill you and your brother.
Oh, please don't kill us. Please, please don't kill us. You know I love you, baby. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault.
You miserable slug. You think you can talk your way out of this? You betrayed me.
No, I didn't. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locust. It wasn't my fault. I swear to God.
Oh, Jake. Jay, honey.
Let's go.
Take it easy.
Has been a Cross the Streams Media Podcast.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.